'Tis the season, is it not? 'Tis the season for a whole lot of stuff. For merriment and parties, and Christmas trees crammed into already small living rooms. 'Tis the season for singing and juggling five things at once and trying with all one's might to remember to bake the cookies and keep the cat from eating tinsel and make your flight and tie a bright red ribbon around something wonderful. And it is also the season for some of us when everyone else seems to be cramming large trees into small living rooms and tying bright red ribbons around wonderful things and trying to make those flights to distant family homes and hearths. 'Tis the season, depending on who you ask, for excess, for busyness, for a whirlwind that, if you are lucky, might just pick you up and drop you off somewhere on the other side of New Year's safe and sound. Or 'tis the season to watch the hubbub and make some tea for one, and alternately wonder what all the fuss is about, or yearn to be fussing some more. It is a complicated time, this holiday season. Simultaneously so full and so empty, so heart-pulsing happy and so heartbreakingly disappointing. It is paradoxically both crowded and lonely. It is crammed full, and it is a great empty space waiting to be filled. There is a reason, perhaps, that we sing of a silent night on Christmas Eve. Underneath it all, there is a quiet place, a silent snowfall, where bells don't ring and Santa doesn't chuckle and horns don't blare in mall parking lots. There is an emptiness we either crave or fear or both beneath all the trappings of the holiday season. It is beautiful, and it is lonely, and it is as much a part of the season as cookies and gifts and cats eating tinsel. And so today I want to talk about emptiness, about the spaces between things, the void that is not filled. Perhaps emptiness is exactly the thing you need more of this holiday season. Perhaps it's exactly the thing you'd like to get away from. Either way, it is present here in the midst of the busiest season of all, the yearning for space, the aching need to fill it, inviting us to find some meaning. Emptiness is not an easy concept for most of us to think about, and that includes me. In fact, it's used most often by preachers and speechifiers as a descriptive attachment to meaningless things. Empty promises, empty faith, empty words, empty heart. Wikipedia tells me that emptiness as a human condition is a generalized sense of boredom, alienation, and social apathy. Boy, I picked a good sermon topic. And yet, no matter how we may choose to avoid the subject, emptiness is something we all have in common. The experience of a void where once there was a great nattering something occupying our attention. An absence where there might one day be a presence, a silence when the singing is done. We can, perhaps, run from the spaces between things. Some of us are very good at this. But we cannot ultimately really hide very effectively, which is why the spiritual leaders of many varieties over the ages have found ways to help us look toward the emptiness itself as if it's the gift wrapped in the great big red bow. Many of the religions of the world have their own take on emptiness and what it has to teach. In the Christian tradition, the idea of kenosis, or spiritual emptiness, says that when a person is purged of self and selfishness, they're free to be open to the will of God. It's said that the greatest of saints live lives not so much of courage or of grandeur or of shockingly awesome intelligence, but of kenosis, because they set aside their desires and followed the often difficult path to which God called them. Thus, to the saints, the goal of life is not to achieve anything or even to be a particularly magnificent person, but instead to be receptive and to be obedient to the call of the Spirit that one can only fully hear when you are quiet enough to notice. In their tradition, the Buddhists take it several steps further, developing what is certainly the deepest and most storied path of spiritual emptiness in the religious world, the utter abandonment of attachment to anything, including oneself. The release into emptiness is so complete in Buddhist thought that I have always struggled with it. The idea that even if only sometimes there could be an emptiness where selfhood or identity or all the things I want and all the things I am were before. This is for me a difficult doctrine because, after all, I like being me. I like having my own desires and I like going after them. I like the things I fill my life with and I like the meaning I place on them, even if I know it's limited and arbitrary. Letting go of all this fullness to trade it in for an emptiness is not something that comes easy. And yet it is, in the Buddhist story, just such a letting go that is the very vehicle of enlightenment. You may remember the story of Siddhartha Gautama, the man who would become the Buddha, who sat silently beneath the Bodhi tree. He sat and he sat, and he remembered all his past lives and everything he had ever done and everything he had ever loved and everything that ever meant anything. He remembered his failures, his glories, his disputes. He remembered 10,000 identities, 10,000 fights he fought well. And yet somehow, in the midst of all of that, as the sitting wore on, he saw the truth that we human beings wear ourselves out in vain. We pursue our own gain and our own goals and our own happiness in all the wrong ways and force ourselves to keep going and going and going, born to die and dying to be born, going, going, going. On and on Siddhartha's memories went until somehow within the highest peaks of human insight, from a place I will never find, he looked down on all his lives and all our lives and he found to his amazement that he could detect no self anywhere. No individual, only this web, this gossamer web that encompassed all things and contained all things and somehow allowed all of us to return to it. There was nothing there where all of his desires should be. There was no meaning behind all the things he wanted. There was only space and maybe, if we're lucky, connection to one another. And just then, in that moment, when he lost all understanding of himself as an individual and a person who could win any game or pursue any prize, just when he lost all thought of himself as separate from all things, the legend tells us that the birds sang where none had been before, and flowers and fruit fell out of the trees, and rain fell where there had been no clouds. All creation, you might say rightly, gave him praise. And that was the moment when Siddhartha Gautama, flinching one muscle and then another, rising beneath the Bodhi tree, became at last the Buddha, the bringer of light, who would go forward and teach the truth of the cosmic unlimited nature of all people, the fact that things cannot fill us, and desires cannot be met, and crowded lives are curiously lonelier than even quiet ones. He had, in a sense, met the emptiness, and in the emptiness he found peace. Which is not to say that emptiness is always or ever easy. It is a painful thing to look out at the vastness. It is a painful thing to have more space than you ever wanted. It is a painful thing to let go of your desires and be in this place where all that wanting was. The desert is lonely, after all. And that pain of feeling it and of letting it go is a part of the journey as well. Just last month, I attended a group of Unitarian Universalist ministers, and I took a week-long training in spiritual direction, which is essentially just listening with people so they can effectively move past their own spiritual impediments and down their own spiritual journeys. It's mostly about listening and staying out of the way. Since we didn't have any guinea pigs of the literal or figurative variety to work with, my colleagues and I were forced to practice listening on one another, which is perhaps the biggest gift we could have given. One of my colleagues, a person that I trust and love, one of those folks that is so competent and so bold that you look at them and wonder how they keep it all together. And my colleague talked about how busy their life is as a minister, about how in the midst of tending to everybody else's needs and the very real traumas in the life of the congregation, they never once slowed down enough to feel their own grief, to suffer their own losses. My colleague broke down into tears there, something not uncommon whenever really honest things are said, and explained that there was within the soul of a busy person's life a deep emptiness, a vast space, waiting to be looked at, acknowledged, and given voice. Underneath all the hustle and bustle, even underneath good and meaningful work, there was an isolation, a sense of space, and my colleague perhaps feared the emptiness, feared that to see it would be too much. So he kept going, stayed busy, kept doing and kept serving. And yet there it was. And the only honest thing to do was admit it. At first, when my colleague spoke of the emptiness beneath ministry and beneath even the most powerful of relationships, we all sort of sighed to ourselves. How sad, we thought. Or at least I thought. A vast emptiness, a lonely place. How tragic. The image that came up in the spiritual director's guidance was that of a desert, a barren land, and I pictured blowing winds on a searing, heated landscape, isolation piled upon isolation, the sheer expanse of emptiness. I remembered when I had been in just such a desert time in my life, and just as I started to hope that I might never feel that way again, the image took a different turn. Something fabulous happened. My colleague's tears of sorrow turned to tears of gratitude when it dawned on us all that a desert, a lonely place, is actually one of the few places in the world where you can see for miles and miles, where you can go in absolutely any direction, and the horizon stretches out uninterrupted and unimpeded. In the midst of all the busyness, the responsibilities, the relationships, both real and tangential, the desert was to my colleague the one place where there was enough room to look around. It was a barren place, full of loneliness and not a little bit of grief. But it was also a place of new beginnings and a place of holy honesty. The emptiness was not just isolated space, it was waiting space, available space. An invitation to start over. Because a person can't create something new unless there is enough space for them to do so. There's no room for a new beginning if you can't even look up from your next footstep. If all your needs are met, how are you to know the depths of your own yearning or the power of your own creativity? I'm reminded of our children's story this morning, the wandering Buddhist nun seeks shelter throughout the town and is turned away again and again, only to find herself beneath moonlit flowers, composing a poem that could never have found voice if she had not been there, in the open spaces, where there's room for something beautiful to be born. In a sense, I think that there must be space in order for there to be purpose. If you are all filled up, if your cup is always overflowing, what else is left for you to do? But if there is a space in your life void of answers, void even of plans, anything can fill it in. The future is an exciting possibility. Change is inevitable, and the horizon stretches out without limit. It's been said that we do shape clay into a pot, but it's the emptiness in the pot that holds. The space that is the most useful. The pot's just a container for the air, a vessel for the waiting emptiness. A person, likewise, must be a vessel for something, an instrument that holds or brings forth something for the world. And in order to hold anything at all, there must first be space. Without some space in one's life or space in one's heart, a person doesn't have to slow down. You just move ahead, existing from day to day, trying to keep up with what is already full, carrying on. But if we meet the emptiness, stare it down without fear, and see it for the inherent possibility it contains, we might begin again, ready to be vessels for the holy, vessels for love, vessels for sacred spaciousness. Let there be spaces in our busy times this season. Let there be spaces between our desires, between our answers, between our accomplishments. Let there be emptiness. And in it, let us find a peace that the season promised. May it be so.